Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here in American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III, and I am joined by the full J-Squared contingent, Mr. Jeff Reed on my left, Jason Tross on my right, Hannah in the screening room. I'm so glad that you joined me on today's program. I was out yesterday feeling a little under the weather, and thankfully Fred, the director of American Family News, stepped in and served beautifully in my stead, but I'm glad to be back with you. I am not 100% out of the woods yet, so to speak, but I feel better than I did yesterday. So we are going to rock and roll for today. I'll remind you, man, the time is just rolling by already. January 27th, I will be joining the brethren at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Vicksburg, Mississippi, if you are in the area. And I've gotten notices, man, people are making the trip for that. Then what in the world is going on here? But I've been invited by the brethren there to preach the Sunday morning service at Emmanuel Baptist Church. So if you are in the area, you are welcome to join us as we worship the Lord together. I look forward to these opportunities to shake hands and hug necks and get to have family reunions all over the country. Some of you saying, family reunion, what are you talking about? If you're in the family of God, we are part of the same family. So when we get together, it's a family reunion. It's a family reunion, and I enjoy gathering with the saints all over the world, and particularly all across this great country.
What time is this?
That's right. Good question. The service starts at 10:45 a.m. 10:45 a.m. Thank you for that, Jeff. I should say that more often. Emmanuel Baptist Church in Vicksburg, Mississippi, 10:45 a.m. All right. Your daily reminder. Like to tell everybody, and I do this as most of you are making your way from your part-time job. That is what you do to generate an income. Most of you work outside of your homes to generate an income, though. Some of you work inside of your home. Some are entrepreneurs. Some are employers, or some are employees. And we need all of you to work. But then you're moving on to your full-time job. What you do inside your family is your full-time job. When Jesus gave his apostles the Great Commission, he explained how the Great Commission was to work out. It was to begin in Jerusalem, then on to Judea and Samaria and the uttermost parts of the world. Too often, unfortunately, many within the family of God focus so much so on winning the world that we neglect home. When the reality is, we need to reverse that. It doesn't mean we should ignore the world, but we certainly should not sacrifice home on the altar of external faithfulness and fruitfulness. I say it all the time. What happens in your house is far more important than what goes on in the White House. You know, far more important than what goes on in the White House. This is just a daily reminder I want to offer you. I want to offer that we don't want to give all that we are, all that we have outside of our family, only to offer our family members the leftovers from a day fully spent. But that when we make the transition going to our full-time job, that we show up with our hard hats and our steel-toe boots on into where we serve faithfully in our homes. The first institution God established was the family. So we want to serve our families well. It is the first order of ministry that every member of the family of God is called to serve faithfully. All right. Now, having said that, we will turn now to Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 11. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 11. I just want to talk a little bit based on the proverbial wisdom offered to us here in the Word of God. I'll read these verses and then we'll dig into it a little bit. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Actually, you and I were talking about this not too long ago. Go to the ant. That was Jason talking about. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber. A little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. Here you have the writer of this particular verses in Proverbs using the practicality of nature. Examine the life of an ant. Examine the ways of an ant. It brings into mind some of what Paul wrote in Romans 1 when he says things that can be known about God are made evident by his creation. The ant having no chief, officer, or ruler. The ant isn't punching anybody's time clock. The ant is not accountable to any particular supervisor or any particular boss. The ant is motivated by the necessity of provision. The ant is motivated and hardwired to function according to the way that God made the ant. And the proverb writer goes on to explain that the ant prepares its food in the summer and prepares its food in the harvest. Why? Because when winter comes, food will be scarce. So you have this gargantuan task, if you will, this huge responsibility of providing food for an entire season where food becomes scarce. But the ant does not allow the size of the apparent obstacle to deter its diligence. All too often, many, especially within the family of God, we are paralyzed by fear of failure. We are paralyzed by the apparent size of the objective, as opposed to saying, you know what? You've heard the old phrase, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. The ant doesn't go out on a daily basis and say, we're going to get all of the food that's needed for the winter today. No. The ant goes out on a daily basis. A daily basis. Every day. Every day. Every day. And ends up providing the food that's needed for the entire season where food becomes scarce. Then, and I love this particular passages because you have the affirmative presentation of the ant, and then the antithesis is offered. The opposite of being diligent as the ant is offered. And the sluggard is called out twice. Verse 9, how long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? How long are you going to stay static? How long are you going to be there? How long are these excuses going to continue to be offered? A little sleep, a little slumber, you know, a little slap in the alarm clock. And there are myriad numbers of reasons and excuses that all come up. And the way the proverb writer is articulating this, it's coming from the perspective of the sluggard saying, oh, it's just a little sleep. I'm just getting a little more sleep. Just a little bit of slumber. And the proverb writer is saying that it seems little to you, but with every exhibition and sloth and slumber, you are beckoning your own poverty. Now, this poverty applies to economic poverty, financial poverty, but it also applies to spiritual poverty, to a poverty of character. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? How long will you be comfortable telling lies? Lies of commission and lies of omission. You know how the lies of commission go. You're telling somebody something that ain't really happened. But then the lies of omission, you leave out some of the critical details. How long will you allow that continue while at the same time professing to be a man of God or a woman of God? How long will you be comfortable having this duplicitous approach to where character is not of high priority, yet at the same time you want to say, but God is blessing us? A little sleep, a little slumber, and poverty will come upon you like a robber. The proverb writer is painting this vivid imagery to where the mounting impact of the poverty, it seems as if it's sudden. But in reality, we have been accumulating the robber unto ourselves every time we've invited the idleness, every time we've had a little sleep, every time we've had a little slumber. It takes the form of, man, this latest emergency requires all of my resources. And I know life happens. I know all the kind of things happen. But like I tell my wife, an emergency is something you can't plan for. You know, we talk all the time. We know cars, they're going to wear out and break. So we should probably put a little bit of money on the side to it to prepare for cars when they need addressing. An emergency is something that we couldn't prepare for. Well, the proverb writer is explaining, poverty comes upon you like an armed robber. It feels as if it is a sudden and aggressive attack. But when in reality, we've been building this up over time. Over time. You know, sometimes it takes the form of when evaluation times come at work and you're up for a raise and you don't get the raise. And immediately it is, well, why didn't I get this raise? And the question is, have you been diligent the whole year long? It seems like it's an immediate dismissal or an immediate rejection or a rebuke, but really it's a rebuke that you have been accumulating the entire year long. Poverty will come upon you like an armed man. The reason why I'm sharing this, and this is something Jason and I were talking about, we all have different economic resources, but you know what we all have that's the same? 24 hours a day. Every single one of us has the exact same amount of time in a day. So what are we going to do with our time? Are we going to take advantage of the ants? Lesson, the visible instruction of the ant, or are we going to continue to allow, you know, excuses to impede our progress? I'm not one of these people to make New Year's resolutions, and I am the type of person that says, well, if we recognize we need to make adjustments, well, let's just get about it. You know, let's just do it. Let's make the adjustments that need to be made. But I can tell you something that's for certain. If you keep doing the same things the same ways, you'll keep getting the same results. You'll keep getting the same results. Some people, you heard it commonly discussed, doing the same thing yet expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. That's something that's very commonly shared. If you keep doing the same things, if I keep doing the same things, if we keep doing the same things the same ways, we are going to continue to get the same results. Then another thing I like to add into this conversation, that a part of being a Christ follower is to understand that you're always in the majority. What do I mean by that? You plus God are a majority. Man, this is something that, thanks be to God, that he has ingrained into the fiber of my being. I don't need a chorus of well-wishers to get about our Father's business. And also, I'll tell you this, that the motivating factor for the believer really is not the results of our activity and our engagement. The motivating factor for us should be obedience. The obedience. So what is God requiring of you? What has God required of you? Let's go to the ant. You know? Let's go to the ant. What has God required of you? The ant is diligent when nobody's looking over their shoulder. Which is why I say for the believer, when an employer hires a believer, they should be able to rejoice. Because they know, man, praise God, we have a person who is now a part of our company who is not even motivated primarily by the paycheck. But they have transformed the work that they do on a daily basis into a portable altar of worship. Same thing should apply for an employer who gets a believer, an employee who gets a believer as an employer. Man, and like some of y'all laughing, you ain't like that where I'm from. I know. Because we got a lot of people faking the funk on the nasty dump, saying that they're one thing, but their fruit, kind of saying a different story. But the way that it should be, we should be like the ant. We don't have to have anybody looking over our shoulder. I'm not going to just do my best, you know, when the bosses are around or when the people are watching. Man, I know that I'm living before an audience of one. The one who has paid the ransom for my soul is always with me. How dare I have more respect for a human being than I have for the Lord? Let's look at the ant, having no chief or officer or ruler, but the ant goes about his business, goes about her business. That should be the testimony that we all have. And understand the admonitions from Proverbs here, that the antithesis, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and it'll instantly seem like you have just been overcome by poverty, economically, poverty of soul, poverty of character, when the reality is you've been heaping this up all along because of the refusal to discharge faithfulness and diligence. Worship is not an activity. Worship is a state of being. May we all become worshipers.
The scales of justice are tipping in the right direction. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. The Department of Justice recently filed legal papers in support of a Christian student group at the University of Iowa. Business Leaders in Christ was kicked off campus and banned for denying a leadership position to an openly gender-confused student. The Justice Department said the school's action is a textbook violation of the First Amendment's rights to free speech and association. The argument was made that the school cannot selectively enforce which religious beliefs are allowed and tolerated. For example, the university allows a Muslim group that strictly only allows Shia Muslims to hold certain positions. This is certainly a double standard. The Department of Justice is right. The campus group was within its rights to abide by its Christian statement of faith. Protect your free speech and stay informed at Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org. That's lc.org.
In the cross, God reconciled sinners to himself.
Pastor Alistair Begg from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
In the cross, God opened up that new and living way so that sinful men and women may, on the strength of something done for them in Christ, might receive a forgiveness that they don't deserve and escape a punishment that they do deserve. The cross points forward to the resurrection. Indeed, I think it's Augustine who says, you know, without the resurrection, the cross says very little, in the same way that the resurrection without the cross says very little. But it's essentially that God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Tarrant County Republicans in Texas voted to keep a Muslim as their vice chairman. Did they do the right thing? The key issue here is not religion, but ideology. The ideology of the Muslim religion is utterly incompatible with the classic Judeo-Christian values on which America was built. There is no room in the Islamic faith for freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of association, or civil rights for women. A Christian can be a Christian first and an American second because America was founded on the values he embraces as a follower of Christ. But a man cannot be a devout Muslim and a patriotic American at the same time unless he first renounces his allegiance to the Islamic faith. If the Muslim in Texas has not done this, then Republicans there did indeed make a mistake.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm going to start this particular segment off with a piece from David Webb's radio show. David Webb is has a show on Sirius XM satellite radio, and he also is a frequent guest on the Fox News channel and other channels. And he was having a conversation with a woman by the name of Areva Martin, who is an analyst at CNN. And the conversation was focused on the merit of qualifications when it comes to job pursuits and things of that nature, as opposed to an evaluation or analysis consisting primarily, exclusively, or even in some significant factor, some significant manner based on skin color. It was a very interesting exchange, and I just want to play a little bit of that for you because this just happened, and I'll just warn you now, you might start laughing before you get to the end of this, well, when you get to the end of this audio. So, Mr. Tross, would you please do us all the pleasure of playing clip number three?
Shouldn't their requirement, their primary requirement, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of network, be that they are capable of covering politics? For instance, if you're going to cover political campaigns, sports may not be the most qualified background. And that brings to the point of if people want to get into these fields, regardless of color, I've chosen to cross different parts of the media world, done the work so that I'm qualified to be in each one. I never considered my color the issue. I considered my qualifications the issue.
Well, David, you know, that's a whole nother long conversation about white privilege and things that you have the privilege of doing that people of color don't have the privilege of.
How do I have the privilege of white privilege?
David, by virtue of being a white male, you have white privilege. This whole long conversation, I don't have time to get into.
Areva, I hate to break it to you, but you should have been better prepped. I'm black.
What I forgot to tell you about David Webb is very similar to myself. We have been blessed with ebony goodness in the form of melanin quantities. And David Webb is a man with a permanent tan, like me. Areva Martin, the CNN analyst, immediately resorted to her, reached down into her bag of predetermined talking points. Let me pull what I'm going to pull. White privilege. That's what I'm going to pull out. David, you can talk about the qualifications and merit when it comes to pursuing various opportunities, because you, as a white male, and David says, I hate to break it to you, Areva, because I thought when I was listening to this at first, I thought when he said, how do I have white privilege? That would have caused Areva to at least pause for a second. But oh no, she presses forward. David Webb says, how do I have white privilege? And immediately when I heard this, because I'm familiar with David Webb and his work, and I'm familiar with what he looks like, I thought, I don't think she knows who he is. I don't think she's, and she didn't. And play it one more time, Jason. This is too funny.
Shouldn't their requirement, their primary requirement, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of network, be that they are capable of covering politics? For instance, if you're going to cover political campaigns, sports may not be the most qualified background. And that brings to the point of, if people want to get into these fields, regardless of color, I've chosen to cross different parts of the media world, done the work so that I'm qualified to be in each one. I never considered my color the issue. I considered my qualifications the issue.
Well, David, you know, that's a whole nother long conversation about white privilege and things that you have the privilege of doing that people of color don't have the privilege of.
How do I have the privilege of white privilege?
David, by virtue of being a white male, you have white privilege. This whole long conversation, I don't have time to get into.
Areva, I hate to break it to you, but you should have been better prepped. I'm black.
This is Ultimate Dodgeball.
Now, how are you going to go on somebody's show? That's a doggone shame. Now, I played that for you because I think this is a perfect microcosm concerning where we are in our cultural dialogue, where her immediate go-to, she didn't even know who she was talking to. Didn't even know nothing about the individual, nothing about the individual's background, nor their story, nor their journey, yet has already come to a conclusion. One might even say prejudged the scenario. I think another word for prejudging is called prejudice. Maybe somebody told me wrong, but she has absolutely prejudged the scenario and resorted to her talking point narrative as opposed to engaging in an actual dialogue with the individual. Folks, that is where we are. I will never forget having the conversation with a brother from Ravi Zacharias' ministry when we talked about living in a post-truth culture where facts become irrelevant. When we have gotten to the place where facts become irrelevant, you won't even look to see who it is you're about to interview with before you accuse them of white privilege. That is amazing. The hubris, the disconnect, the cognitive dissonance. I mean, it's amazing. But folks, this is where we are. There is a ready-made, pre-packaged narrative that's waiting. Oh. You know, have the whole scenario where, if you want to go this route, press this one. You want to go this route, press this one. That is the society that we're living in. And I just thought, maybe Areva will be better prepared for her next interview. Moving right along. I wanted to get to this yesterday, But as you know, I went on the show yesterday. Recently, Mayor Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, offered his State of the City address. And in it, he, in my view, completely encapsulated in short phrasing the fundamental understanding of regressive ideology. And he said it, and it's just so amazing that just recently, in our recent past, you had people who believed these things, who had these ideas, but they wouldn't come right out and say it. But now, we are in an era, like I said, where people are openly declaring themselves to be communists and socialists. And I want you to hear for yourself what Mayor Bill de Blasio said during his State of the City address. It's clip number one.
Brothers and sisters, there's plenty of money in the world. There's plenty of money in this city. It's just in the wrong hands. You deserve a city that gives you the share of prosperity that you have earned.
Plenty of money in the world, plenty of money in the city, but it's just in the wrong hands. And it's interesting that you're doing a State of the City address, but you're talking about how much money is in the world. Of course, because Bill de Blasio wants to run for president. That's why he's doing that. That's why he's doing it. But leaving that aside for the moment, there's plenty of money in the world, but it's just in the wrong hands. Says who? Bill de Blasio? Says who? Subsequent to this State of the City address, Jake Tapper, who works at CNN, who occasionally is plagued by a spat in journalism, he asked Bill de Blasio about this, and he asked the question that I believe needed to be asked, and it's clip number two.
You said something pretty radical this week that I want to ask you about. You said, quote, there's plenty of money in the world. There's plenty of money in the city. It's just in the wrong hands.
Yep.
That's a quote.
That is a quote.
Who decides whose hands are the right hands and whose hands are the wrong hands?
Look at what's happening in my city. Look what's happening all over the country. Millions upon millions of people who literally can barely make ends meet. Working people who are working one job, working harder than ever, longer hours than ever. The pace of our lives gets tougher and tougher, and people get less and less back. Why? Because the 1% really has rigged the system, including the recent tax law that gave a huge windfall to the corporations and the wealthy. This is systematic. I said in the speech, this has been an agenda from Reagan's administration right on through to Trump's to take money from working people and give it to the 1%. So when I say there's plenty of money in this country, it's just in the wrong hands.
Yeah.
It means to say, we need policies that give back to working people, like guaranteeing health care for all.
So, but what's interesting about the argument, which I think struck a lot of people, is you're not talking about fairness. You're saying these people have money and it's wrong that they have money. Not they have money, they live exorbitant or wealthy, comfortable lifestyles, and therefore they could give a little bit more to help these people. You're saying it's wrong that they have money. And who decides whether it's wrong? That's my question.
Bingo. That is the question. The nerve of you to say it's wrong for somebody to have money. So if I, or say my great-grandfather, worked hard, worked his fingers to the bone to build up an inheritance for my father and my grandfather and myself and my children, it's wrong for us to have money? Says who? Says who? And this is, man, this is the touchstone of regressivism. It's not. There's an argument that is saying, well, yeah, this is just unfair. We need this. He's not even talking about a fairness in policies. He's saying you should not have money. It's wrong for you to have money. Says who? This is America. You don't get to determine whether or not it's wrong for somebody else to have money. The beauty of America is that we can all make moves. There is no other nation in the history of the world that has moved more people from the impoverished ranks to the ranks of the middle class and upper middle class than the United States of America. And the thing, and I've been reading, studying up on this, and I've posted a couple things on social media in this regard, that we have reached the place to where there is an historical and constitutional illiteracy that is so prevalent to where the people, everyday people, no longer understand what it means to be an American citizen. They don't know that the luxury and the prosperity that we enjoy in this nation is rare, not only in the world today, but even in human history. It's rare. Mr. de Blasio, you do not get to determine whether it's right or wrong for me to have money. And this is the question. If de Blasio is advancing policies that are based on the premise that he has concluded it's wrong for certain people to have money, well, who are the people that get to make those decisions? This is why when I was talking about Alexandria Cortez's Green New Deal and going into the numbers where they say that the ultimate objective is to tax the rich, when that is not the objective at all, because their agenda cannot be accomplished by solely taxing the rich. They will tax everyone. Everyone. And the redistributive ethos is present that in the course of taxing everyone, then the government becomes the final arbiter of who is quote unquote right to get some of the resources. And the thing that happens is that it is not a formula for an expansion of prosperity. It is a formula to create an equivalence in poverty and mediocrity. And this is what we have willfully become ignorant of in our time period. Who are you to say it's right or wrong for me, for my family, for other people and their families that they work hard for, the revenue that they've generated over time, to say that it's wrong for them to have money? Folks, this is Divide and Conquer 101. This is Carl Alinsky 101. This is 99% versus 1%. This is class envy. This is a political orientation that is based primarily on the sinfulness of covetousness. I'm going to just tell you what it is. The parable of the talents that's in scripture is based on the fact that if you are blessed, if you are prosperous, that doesn't take any skin off my nose. It doesn't hurt me for you to be prosperous. But the entire penchant of his declaration is based on a notion that in order for them to be successful, it has come at my expense. And that is straight up and down anti-American. Straight up and down. We need to rediscover our founding principles. A lot of people don't even realize that when the Constitution was finished, many of the founders didn't even sign the Constitution because they still felt like it provided too much authority for the national government, the federal government. And so you had this process to where the Bill of Rights were promulgated, and this process was engaged in, and it became the Federalist Papers, where you had people who were supportive of the Constitution and the federal government, known as the Federalists, and those who were anti-Federalists, who opposed it, that wrote under pseudonyms, articulating the notions of freedom. We need to rediscover these things. We need to rediscover these things. I was having a conversation, and I posted a little bit about this, about imperialism. And I said, one of the sleights of hand that has taken place in our educational system is that imperialism is taught as if it is an exclusively Western phenomenon. When the reality is, there is a such thing as non-Western imperialism. Do I need to talk about Genghis Khan? Do I need to remind us about Pol Pot? You know, do we need to talk about the Ottoman Turks? Imperialism has been a product of the sinful nature of mankind. And the thing is that I found hilariously laughable is that when you remove God from the perspective, then you result to the law of tooth and claw, survival of the fittest. So how can you at one point reject the superintendency of a Lord that establishes a moral code and a moral compass, and then at the same time have a concern about imperialism? But leaving that aside for the moment, when imperialism is discussed as if it is an exclusively Western concept, the goal is not to educate. It is to indoctrinate, and it is to paint America and Western civilization as if it is uniquely evil, when the fact is, throughout all human history, it actually is a history of men taking advantage of one another. But we need to discover, we need to rediscover in our time, and this is, I'm just going to tell you, this is not something that the school system is going to do for you. So you and I are going to have to educate our own families and to educate ourselves. I wonder how many people who are even a part of this audience has even read the Federalist Papers. I'd venture to say not many have. I would encourage you to dig into these things, because only when you see and understand how this experiment in freedom that became the United States of America, how it is not only unique in our time, it's unique in all of world history and worth fighting for.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You can't squeeze more into 3 days, and we will, in Washington, D.C., on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and in September. We're going to the Capitol, Library of Congress, the Supreme Court, the Lincoln Memorial, the Korean and Vietnam Memorials, the Iwo Jima Memorial, the Arlington National Cemetery, the White House, that's outside, Jefferson Memorial, and the National Archives, and we're going to Mount Vernon on that Saturday of our tour. So much to see, so much to do, and it includes lectures and talks from Stephen McDowell, who will be our historian along the way. For more information on these June or September Spiritual Heritage Tours and the separate tour to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, for all the information on this, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. The makers of the Gillette razor have declared war on toxic masculinity. I was sort of hoping they would declare war on razor burn, but whatever. Procter & Gamble's new commercial calls out men for sexual harassment and bullying and toxic masculinity. They ponder the question, is this the best a man can get? Gillette wants all of us guys to hold each other accountable for our behavior, and they've dedicated themselves to promoting positive, attainable, and inclusive versions of what it means to be a man. In other words, Gillette wants men to be more ladylike. It's a bit of a stretch to lump all men into the hashtag MeToo basket. I mean, most of the guys I know are gentlemen. They provide for their families. They protect their loved ones, doing what men have done since the days of Adam. So I'm really not quite sure what Gillette is getting at. I just hope they don't want us to start shaving our legs. I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. We will open the phone lines this segment, so if you'd like to discuss anything we have delved into on the program thus far today, you are welcome to do so. We talked about Proverbs, the scripture in Proverbs using the ant as a model of diligence. We talked about Areva Martin accusing David Webb, a man with a permanent tan, of being a beneficiary of white privilege. Man, that's sad. That's sad. We've also talked about Bill de Blasio, who, by the way, is rich himself. Bill de Blasio has all kinds of money. But you see, he's trying to get elected. He wants to be president. So if you want to get president, be president. Trade on the covetousness or foment covetousness among the people and present yourself as if you are the man of the people. When the not-so-secret secret of socialism is that it completely eradicates the middle class and it creates a sharing of scarcity and divides the populace into two groups. The uber-wealthy and the dirt poor with nothing in between. So the number to call if you'd like to be a part of the program is 888-589-8840. The number again is 888-589-8840. The phone lines are open and you are welcome to call. In the meantime, I'm going to move on to this next topic, which is of interest to me, and it should be of interest to all freedom-loving people the world over, that today the British House of Commons voted on Theresa May's deal, proposed deal to facilitate Brexit. If you recall, a little over a year ago, the British citizens demanded a referendum because they said, man, we don't want to be a part of this European Union anymore. We don't like having unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats in Brussels, Belgium, at the EU headquarters, telling us what to do in England. They are setting our financial policies. They are setting our trade policies. They are setting our immigration policies, and we don't want no more of it. So they said Brexit, Britain's exit. Well, Theresa May has been working for 2 years now. Yeah, I should have said 2 years ago was the vote. She's been working for 2 years now on a deal between Britain, because she's the Prime Minister of Britain, or I should say the United Kingdom, and the European Union, which was a horrible deal. I mean, the Theresa May's Brexit deal still left the sovereignty concerning immigration policy among the European Union. It still gave the European Union precedent in determining its trade agreements. And the British people are saying, excuse me, that's not what we voted for. We said Brexit, let's just hang around a little longer. No, we want out of this joint. So I want you to hear, because this, man, it's, if you're unfamiliar with the British House of Commons, it is. I'll tell you, like my producer Jeff said, because he grew up in England, and he said, man, I used to watch the House of Commons. It was more entertaining than wrestling. Because it is. It's hilarious. So Theresa May's Brexit deal was presented for a vote before the British House of Commons today, and I want you to listen to its outcome. Please play clip number 5.
The ayes to the right, 202. The noes to the left, 432.
The ayes to the right, 202. The noes, oh dear! The ayes to the right, 202. The noes to the left, 432. So the noes have it. The noes have it. Unlock!
I like it. That's going to be what I'm going to say when I go home and my children are acting up. Order! He said order, but he said it with some order! I like it. That's what I'm going to say with my children. Abigail, order! By next time I get a regressive on the phone line, order! Elizabeth Warren, you want to have another beer drinking video? Order! I like it. We need to make a button of that. That needs to go in the system. I like it. Man, the House of Commons is off the rip. These people are off the chain, man. That was literally on the floor of the House of Commons. And our House of Representatives is kind of patterned along the lines of the House of Commons. And our Senate is patterned along the lines of the British House of Lords. They are much more stoic, much more reserved. But the House of Commons is a riot. They shut down Theresa May's Brexit deal by a vote of 432 members of Parliament voting against it. Only 202 voted to support it. So the deadline for Brexit is March 29th. So it leaves the prospect now, first of all, politically speaking, the extremely regressive members in Britain's Parliament called the Labour Party, they have now offered a vote, what's called a no-confidence vote, to basically remove Theresa May from the prime ministership. If that vote prevails, then it will be a new cobbling together of a new form of government. But if that vote fails, then Theresa May has already said she would present a new plan to exit. And listen, the conservative members of the British Parliament, they're saying, we want out. We don't want them to dictate to us any terms. Don't you understand that we told you we want out? And Nigel Farage basically said so. And his response, I'll let you hear that, and then we will get to calls. Go, please, Jason, to clip number 6.
Very simple. We want to govern our own country. We want to make our own laws, control our own borders.
It's not simple, Nigel. That's the whole point.
It's very simple.
It's about tariffs and it's about relationships and everything.
We didn't vote for a series of deals. We voted to leave. And Article 50 actually helped us in that because it gave us two ways of leaving. One was a withdrawal agreement, the other was on WTO terms, and that is what 500 MPs voted for. And what you are seeing in Parliament is a complete betrayal of the greatest democratic exercise in the history of our nation.
He's right. The British people have said, we want out. Kind of like the American people said, we want a wall. Excuse me, did I just say that out loud? And the politicians in Britain are acting as if they didn't realize the British people said, we want out. They want out. They want out. It's really a question of national sovereignty. But let me get to the phone lines. We'll start in Virginia. We'll go first to Keith in Virginia. Keith, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I believe that these people, de Blasio talking about redistribution of wealth, why do those people in Congress give up their pay and put it back into the system? They're supposed to be representing us, but they're getting paid to represent us.
That's right.
And, you know, think about it. He's talking about who should have the money, who should not have the money. They shouldn't have the money because they're not doing what they're supposed to do.
Thank you, Keith, for your call. I do think they should be paid. I don't think they should have to do the job for free. But I will say this. In the founding era, service in Congress was considered a part-time gig. There was no such thing as full-time politicians. They actually all had real lives, real jobs that they went home to. We've now kind of created it to become a full-time gig, which is rather interesting because the majority of the new laws, so to speak, that are created now, they're not even created by Congress. They're created by the administrative fiat that the congressional lawmaking function has been exported to all of these executive agencies, and they create rules, and the rules are given the force of law because the agencies themselves have been created by Congress. But in terms of laws that are actually passed by Congress, it's actually not even that much. And most of you know that President Trump, you know, he's wealthy, a wealthy man, donates his salary. But I don't think the Congress members should not get paid. But I do think if a government shutdown occurs, Congress shouldn't be paid. And there was legislation presented to that end. Now, do I expect it to go anywhere? No. I don't think they're going to vote to not be paid. But they shouldn't be paid. If the government is shut down, why are you getting checks? And you're the reason why it shut down. Back to the phone lines. We go next to Texas, where Arthur is on the line. Arthur, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Long time listener. Appreciate your show. Lots of good topics today. And I was just had a two-part question. One was I had to take a phone call. I didn't get to hear the lady's response in the white privilege conversation, like what her response was when he came back and, you know, said he was black. That was one question. And the other one's kind of off topic from debt. It was something more pertaining to yesterday about government shutdown. And just, I was just curious to know, like, your opinion of, like, what the end game looks like as far as, like, resolving everything, what you think will more than likely take place. And that was pretty much it.
Okay. Thank you, Arthur, for your call and your questions. First, want to get her name right, Areva Martin. She didn't have a response. Her only response was, well, let me apologize. Will you give me a moment to apologize? But the point of the matter, in my opinion, wasn't about the necessity of an apology based on an inaccurate perception based on somebody's skin color. The point that I felt like was glaring is that she had this argument prepackaged. You know, it's one of those things you pull up at the gas station, it's already wrapped in cellophane. Facts? Who needs facts? And to your question about the government shutdown, for as far as I understand, President Trump is not budging. You know, and I have to tell you, frankly, man, I think it's absolutely ridiculous for us to have gotten to this place to where you have Democrat Congress members who in 2006, in 2013, all supported a border barrier. These people have all said that there's a crisis at the border. And now all of a sudden, you don't want to offer a paltry $5.7 billion for a wall? When the federal budget, the expenditures are expected to reach in 2019, $4.5 trillion. Don't even get me started. So I, for one, I hope the president stands his ground. My heart does go out to the federal workers who are not getting paid immediately, but I don't know if I've said this on the program yet. I think I did, but I'll say it just in case you don't know. Congress has passed, and the president has already signed a law stating that once the government reopens, every furloughed federal employee will get every penny. That's those who are working and those who are not working will get every penny they were due for this time period. That has passed. So they will get their money. They will get their money. But the other thing is, man, the government, this is the longest shutdown in American history. But it seems things are just rocking and rolling. Rocking and rolling as usual. And I think one of the things that is an unintended consequence from the shutdown is that the American people will be fully apprised of the reality that, wait a minute, the government has been shut down all this time and things are kind of still going. Pretty interesting. Back to the phone lines. We'll stay in Texas. We'll go next to John. John, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. It's a delight to speak with you. Keep up the great work. At the beginning of your show, you were playing a clip of an interview where a supposed white man being interviewed by our friends at CNN quickly found out that she didn't have her credentials together and in order, and she was inaccurate, to say the least. And I'd like to draw a parallel to that. And you might remember a couple of weeks ago, the young girl down in Houston, Jasmine Barnes, that was killed.
Yes.
They, Black Lives Matter, I think Maxine Waters, everyone came out of the woodwork and immediately called it a hate crime until they immediately found out that the killer was black.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And then all of the people who were making all of the noise before, they all of a sudden went away as if there was still wasn't a little girl who was killed. Almost as if the little girl's death wasn't really their main focus to begin with.
It's the agenda.
You're absolutely right, John. And I have to tell you, I was irate about that because you had all types of media efforts employed, and there were reports that some of these people, like Sean King, who I unaffectionately refer to as Talcum X, or Martin Luther King, whichever one you prefer, sharing all this information when the perception was that it was a person with lighter skin color who was responsible for this young girl's death, that it was a full-on press assault. But there was information immediately available that suggested that it wasn't, you know, the purported hate crime that some of them wanted it to be. And so they continued fanning these flames. Then when it came out that the people who were responsible for the murder actually also had darker skin color, then no more media interest. And that sickens me. Because it's a glaring and obvious example that there's really not compassion for the loss of life. There's really, they don't really care about the image of God being snuffed out in the form of this little girl. All they care about is their agenda. It's utterly despicable. To Ohio we go next, where Carolyn is on the line. Carolyn, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Abraham. I enjoy your program. Mayor de Blasio, okay, I was just really ticked off when I heard his speech. I said, this is ridiculous. His net worth alone is $145 million.
Uh-huh.
So what's he talking about? And what really ticks me off even more so, I mean, this man's making $225,000 a year, but guess what? He is going to give himself a great big raise.
That's right.
15%
yep.
a year. I mean, that's about, what, $33,750. I looked it up. So then he'll be making $258,750 a year.
You're absolutely right, Carolyn. We have to leave it right there because one of the things, just like with Areva Martin and all these other things, one of the key characteristics of regressives is hypocrisy. Thank you for listening to the program.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.